Okay, this is Jason Mirko. The date is, let's see, it's Thursday, April 19th, 2012. This is the first interview with Christine Lien. This is for the UW-Madison Oral History Program, in particular the Capitol Protest Series. And this interview is taking place in the math department in Madison, Wisconsin. The math department at UW-Madison. Okay, so I guess, yeah, just to start out, can you tell me a little bit about how you decided to come to UW for grad school?
Yeah, so I guess it started with, well, applying to grad school. I only got into actually here and UC Davis were the only two. And at the time, I wanted to, I was very specific about wanting to do geometry or topology. And UC Davis was supposedly very strong in that. Whereas here, at the time, we had a lot of professors that were leaving the department, and so UW-Madison was a little bit weak in that. And so I kind of talked to some professors about it, and I remember just sort of, they were kind of split on where I should go. I had one professor sort of say that UW-Madison should be the place to go just because it's a better school, technically, than UC Davis. And just having that sort of on my resume would help me find a job afterwards. And I also had a professor say that, you know, if I really wanted to do topology geometry, I should stick with UC Davis. Like, it's also about writing a really good thesis. So I ended up visiting both places. And the thing that appealed to me about Madison was how liberal the town was, because that was one of my concerns in coming to the Midwest. And it was clear when visiting UC Davis that that was not the case. Sort of, I kind of asked people about it, and at UC Davis they sort of said, oh, you know, it's a college campus, it's a university campus, it's going to be liberal, and just didn't feel liberal to me. And it was they were also very clear about the fact that the town itself was going to be very conservative. But coming out to Madison, it was clear that, you know, UW-Madison, like any other campuses, it was a university campus, it was liberal, but the town itself felt more liberal than the campus. And so that was an important aspect for me moving out to the Midwest, and so it's kind of how I ended up here.
Okay, so I guess before the protests last year, had you been involved in any political stuff, or?
Sort of. I in undergrad I was part of the Asian American Mentor Program we had at Pomona College. That's kind of a misnomer, I feel like, because I didn't do much mentoring. I mean, what they did was they would pair us up with an incoming freshman who's also identified as Asian American, and the idea was that, you know, they'd get to know somebody on campus, you know, you come to our events, and, you know, somebody who was a couple years older. I didn't do much mentoring. Our group, I mean, every single campus of the five C's had something similar to this, but Kiwanis was particularly political. We were particularly interested in sort of politics and identity issues and, you know, sort of anything that's sort of involving Asian Americans in this political sphere. And so that to me was what that group really did for me. And really, like, I sort of really opened my eyes to a lot of this idea of being identifying as Asian American and identifying as a woman and sort of being open to politics in general. And I don't know that we did anything in the community politically, but we did a lot of sort of raising awareness on the campus itself. Sort of at a lot of events, we would, you know, push people to register to vote, or and I think that was also around the time, was that around then, or was, I feel like it was around then when California had their recall of the governor. And so that was also something that I was following very closely, and sort of, I mean, I think up to that point I wasn't really paying much attention to politics at all. So even when the recall was happening for California, I didn't really understand why we were recalling Davis. And so, but nonetheless, I followed that election very carefully. sort of watching the returns when this was coming in. And I feel like that might more or less be it. I mean, before that is, you know, yeah, that would have been it, actually. Because before that, I was not able to, sort of anything else major before that, I was not able to vote in. Certainly watched the Gore and Bush elections, but I was not old enough to vote in that one. And then I did vote in the Kerry and Bush one. But, yeah, I think other than those sort of things, and hasn't been much more prior involvement in politics. I feel like I've been following it, I feel like I've been doing it, but I haven't been super active in it. I haven't been like Regina, who's been knocking on doors and canvassing, and I haven't done that. Mm-hmm. I'm still not doing that, so.
Was there any, or with the mentoring program, was there anything, did they get involved in the California, the gubernatorial recall at all, or was that a sideline for them?
Yeah, that was a sideline. I think they were specifically, they were more interested, there was something else that was happening around that time too, which was a proposition in California, and the proposition was basically eliminating any sort of governmental forms being able to ask about race at all. And so it was brought up by the UC Board of Regents, one of the regents, in an attempt to sort of eliminate any kind of affirmative action that could possibly happen. So race, not having any sort of college decision, admissions decisions being based on race in any way. And so that was something that they were actively involved in. And so sort of something that we were sort of going around promoting and discussing why this was not something that we would want to happen, that though it sounds great, that it's in fact could be quite harmful as far as admission decisions go. And Pomona College at the time, even though they were active about, you know, Pomona College was a private university, so they wouldn't have been affected by this, but at the time while they were actively sort of recruiting and, you know, people of color who were Hispanic origin or Latin American origin, or who were African American, like they sort of excluded Asian Americans from this category. The reasoning being that we were already sort of about 15% of each incoming class, so they felt like they did not need to include us, and they were sort of talking about it. And I think what our group was doing at that time was really actively trying to push for them to include us, not necessarily saying that they needed to recruit us more, but just that we should be part of this sort of discussion, and we should be one of the groups that they at least consider and watching carefully. And also, even though we were 15% of the admissions, I mean, of each incoming class, it was primarily East Asian, and we wanted them to at least think about, like, what would it mean to have a diverse Asian American sort of population, which should include Southeast Asians as well. And that was not something that they were even, like, they just weren't even thinking about us at all. They sort of thought that, oh, you know, we were doing fine, but that's clearly not the case. And I remember, too, like, right around that time in California, too, that year, that incoming class, I sort of talked to a few of them, and many of them had kind of sort of said that, who had identified as Asian American kind of left that off the form altogether. So they declined to, you know, answer this question with the idea that somehow that with all this talk around that time about affirmative action, that they would be, that people would, that the, you know, colleges wouldn't accept them because of it. That had they listed their race, that the colleges would not accept them. Yeah, they were afraid of basically a cap on Asian Americans, which, as far as I knew, was not happening in Pomona, but, yeah.
Are there any other, and like specific issues that the, you know, the mentoring program took on, or, you know, you said that there was some kind of campus level, you know, trying to raise awareness about various issues. Were there any other things that you remember that were kind of involved in that?
I So the way that happens, I was involved in that group in the fall of my junior year, and then the spring of junior year, I was abroad. So a lot of the things I just mentioned was sort of happened in the fall, right? Which makes sense, it was right around election time. But in the spring, there was like a lot of those, and you probably remember this, but like, something had happened on, I don't remember how the event started, but there was basically all these racial incidents that was happening that spring, and so there was a lot of discussion and a lot of buzz, and a lot of which, you know, that our group was very active in participating in, but I was not clear on what their level of involvement was because I was not there on campus, and so for anything that I got was through emails and this part of this communication, and mm-hmm. so I got the idea that we were, you know, there's a lot of discussion about like, okay, well, how should we respond to this? What should we do? And we weren't, like, it was hard for me to sort of gauge exactly what we ended up doing without having been there. I do remember we would put out a newsletter, actually. Our group put out a newsletter once a semester, and I do remember sort of, I was kind of, you know, trying to follow exactly what all the events, because, and what was happening on campus, even though I was abroad. And I remember just, like, sort of at one point saying, being asked, like, hey, you know, you're off campus, you know, we're putting together this newsletter, and it's in the middle, right in the middle of all this thing that's happening, like, can you sort of give an off-campus sort of perspective, like, being abroad, like, even though you're away from this, we know that, you know, clearly you've been following all these things, could you tell us how you felt about it? And I remember writing something about it in our newsletter that went out. And it was a while ago, and I don't remember what that sequence of events was. I don't remember how it started. I do remember it ended up being that one of the bigger scandals about one of the professors at Claremont kind of car being vandalized turned out to be her being vandalized. But I feel like there were other sort of racial incidents that led up to that she felt like that was necessary to do in order to prove a point. But I don't remember what the things that happened before were. But yeah, before her, she had gone and sort of tried to make her point by vandalizing her own car. It was right around that time that our group was sort of was very clear that there was a lot of very different opinions about what was happening and whether or not there was actually, you know, whether or not sort of the climate at the 5Cs could be difficult at all for any of the minorities. And sort of our group was definitely, you know, I mean, was of the opinion that it could be, and that's sort of, I mean, it's kind of the reason our group exists at all. And so I think we were definitely part of this discussion, and we were actively all, you know, having a discussion with people we knew or friends, but I don't know what sort of official level we might have had other than sort of having out newsletters. And we also do a retreat every year, and in the spring, and I was not there for the spring one again because I was abroad, but the spring one is usually the one that they open up to anybody, whereas the fall one they limited just people who identify as Asian American. In the spring they open up to anybody to join, and then I'm not sure how that spring retreat went, actually. I don't know what kind of issues they discussed.
Okay, so I guess, let's maybe move on to stuff from the protests here. So, I guess let's start with the teach out. So, tell me about if you were involved in that, or what, or, you know, if you participated, or if you were involved at all in, like, the behind-the-scenes stuff with the TAA calling for the teach-out, or, you know, whatever your involvement with it was.
I was not, I mean, you know, TAA always describes that period of time as, you know, non, because it was just craziness that was happening at that time. Like, and I sort of went back, at least just I sort of went back and read through, like, some of the things I had written down at that time when I was just, you know, trying to collect some thoughts. And it amazed me how quickly everything had happened. Like, it was really, really fast. I remember, like, it felt like a while. It felt like it was at least several weeks, but, you know, it literally went from, like, very first protest was on the 14th for the TAA, and then, like, by the 26th, there was talk about being kicked out of the Capitol. Like, it was very, very fast. And so I can't remember exactly when the teach out happened, but I do remember the way it sort of happened was that we were, you know, they did all the sort of testimony kind of things that was happening on that Tuesday, I believe. That sort of dragged on night. That's when the sort of they started camping out. And I felt the teach out when it had happened was it started with. I don't know that the TAA ever sort of officially. I mean, I feel like it started out with some buzz. I feel like the sequence of events went like this. I feel like at one point, the Madison schools in the Madison school district, teachers in the Madison school district, sort of said that they were, you know, they were calling out sick, and then we got wind of that, and then suddenly we got wind of that, like, this was not just happening in Madison but happening in other areas as well, Wisconsin, and so. That was when the TAA sort of said, you know, we might call for a teach out. Like, and, you know, not officially, but I think the way that the email sort of, or the way that they sort of talked about it was that we're going to, you know, suggest that we avoid activity on campus. Not necessarily saying that we won't continue our teaching duties or whatever, but if we can, aim for someplace off campus. And the decision was not, this was, I mean, you know how TA works. Now every decision is made by, you know, proposing a motion, everything passed, and having certain membership and stuff. And at that point, I think that was literally whoever was, happened to be in that room, and it became a buzz that they said, okay, we should do this. Like, we need to show some kind of solidarity with our teachers and stuff. And so this is, again, back in that time when nothing went exactly how it was supposed to go. So I was not exactly, I was in the room when the decision was made, but it wasn't like, it was almost just like the sort of buzz that sort of happened, and then, you know, we're like, okay, we're going to do it, and then somebody sent out the email. It was not even, there was no sort of official voting or anything of the sort. And I think we were all waiting for it. I feel like, I don't know, at least I was. I feel like there was a lot of, at that point, we all sort of felt like, some kind of strike action was imminent. I feel like we were all kind of waiting for something to happen. And we were waiting for someone to declare it, kind of. And I know that there were members in the TA that were, who were in a lot of discussions and with all the various organizations that we're sort of part of, all the various labor organizations, AFL-CIO and AFT and all that stuff. And so, kind of discussing like what exactly should happen, and, you know, and it was very clear about the fact that us being such a tiny, tiny union, that if we wanted to do anything, we really needed to be in conjunction with all these other bigger groups. But yeah, I mean, and I feel like the only time that teach out actually affected me, because it sort of happened one day and then it happened another day, like sort of they kind of came to discussion. I think the first one, I think they like happened on a Wednesday. And I didn't teach on Wednesday, so it didn't affect me, so that was fine. But then they sort of continued, had another one on the Thursday, I think, they continued to Thursday. And I remember sort of scrambling to be like, to discuss it with my students. And I was very specific with my students and said, like, you know, there's this thing that's happening in the Capitol, here's what I want to do. And asking, like, can we work around this? I don't think I was trying to be like, oh, I'm feeling sick. Like, I was very specific about, like, you know, I want to be this. You know, this is something that I have a personal interest in. And my students are, you know, future teachers. They're in the education, school of education. And so I didn't really bring up what was happening at the Capitol politics-wise. I just said that there's something happening at the Capitol that you probably already know about that, you know, and if you don't, you should at least find out about it because it's going to affect you or, you know. And in general, you should be aware about what's happening 2 miles away from you. And so, yeah, and I think most of them were pretty willing to work with me, and it was, I think that, the way that teach out the one that had affected me, that one happened on a Thursday, that it was when my students were supposed to have an exam. And so I think that actually made it easier, because it was, I kind of allowed them to say, you can take the exam, I can offer at least three times. Everybody can make it at least one of those three times, so let's do that. And I think they liked it for the fact that, I mean, it worked well for them in the sense that they got to have more time to actually study for the exam. And so they didn't complain too much. Although they did later, later on that semester, my grandma passed away, so I had to take off for a week also, which also happened to be their exam week, the second exam. And they kind of complained to me about it, about how the first exam I moved back because I had personal things, and the second exam I did not move back because I had a sub. And so the sub gave the exam, and so I was like, okay, well. Yeah, they complained to me about that part. But the teacher, I think, the thing that also worked out well for the teacher was that I was kind of going to do this without actually talking to anybody about it. As in, I mean, Lemp was the supervisor for us at the time. And I was just going to do it. It's not like I'm completely getting rid of a class period, or if they had an exam, they're still all going to take the exam. I'm making it up at a later point. It's actually more work for me, because now that I show up, proctored two or three exams now. And, you know, I worked it out with my students. I just didn't, but I think Shijin got wind of it, or somebody in our department, one of the professors got wind of it, which they should, but they sent out department-wide email, and then Shijin was very specific about suggesting that it shouldn't happen, I guess, or that we shouldn't do this. At this point, actually, Limp had already, the way it happened was, we heard about the teach out and I was going to do it, and I started a series of emails already with my students about, can we do this? Then Limp sent out an email to all of us, 1-3-X TAs, and said, okay, I understand that there's this thing that's happening, I'm sorry, but, you need to make sure that, you make it up in some way, shape, or form, check with me, kind of thing. And then, so, I think we all individually emailed responses to them. Wait, that happened? No, I remember. Okay. I started a series of emails. Seth, who was 1-3-X TA, sent an email to all of us 1-3-X TA saying that, here's this thing that's happening, here's what's happening in my class, what do we all think about it? And I was about to respond immediately being I'm participating in it. I'm going to do this. Just to Seth, I wasn't going to email all the other TAs as well, along with Lemp. But Lemp was part of on this, and Lemp sort of responded, and his response was I don't really want to completely encourage you to just abandon, but I also understand why you want to do this kind of thing. And so I think then we all individually emailed Lemp and sort of said, here's what we want to do, would that be okay? And he approved the majority of it. I can't imagine any of us having anything that he said that he would not be happy with. I think he wanted to make sure that our students weren't just completely, lost teaching time or lost class time. And so sort of all our different suggestions about how we were going to make up that time, I think he was completely fine with it. He was very open to it. And then Shijin's sort of email came out. And then there was a lot of back and forth. And Daisy and I talked about it at one point, and what we kind of said was that we just sort of wish that, Shijin sent out this email, and we felt like he had to send this email. He was a department chair. He had to sort of come out and be like, okay, you need to find if you did this, you need to find equivalent substitute, but we can't possibly encourage you to participate in something in which you're canceling class. And so we felt like Shijin had to send out this email, but we didn't feel like any of the responses were necessary. We felt like we all could have just quietly worked it out with our supervisors or the people we were teaching with, and it would have been fine. And this is actually one of the things that the TA has sort of discussed, that if we were to have to actually call the strike, that in order for it to be successful, because it's not, we're legally prohibited from being able to strike, but that in order for it to be successful, it really depends on the support of our department. There's no way for them to actually take any sort of attendance about whether or not we showed up to work, except for the people we were working immediately for, like our lecturers or our supervisors. Those are the people. And so really, as far as them, you know, anybody being able to take any sort of action against us for having done, you know, illegally strike or done any sort of strike action, it really involved the department, basically our supervisor sort of reporting who didn't show up to work, which the way the TA has sort of put it in the past, they sort of generally declined to, because you work closely with these people. And so that's kind of how Daisy and I both felt about it, was that we could have just worked it out individually with our supervisors, and that would have been enough. We didn't necessarily need to have the series of emails that happened with Shijian, where people were basically wanted the department itself to kind of come out and say, you know, yes, we're in full support of Ti Chao. And I remember, like, I think there were a lot of sort of very negative reactions and a lot of negative emails that ended up being sent to the whole department towards Shijian. And I responded to Shijian, actually, to that email, and I said, and this was just individually with just Shijian, and I said that I understood why he sent out that email to begin with. I understood, you know, that him as department chair, his interest is in keeping the department running and the students, you know, are still served. And so I told him that I think all the response that he'd been getting was quite negative and unnecessary. But yeah, I mean, I think the way that thing had sort of happened, I feel like I would have done it anyway. I would have done the teach out anyway if we never had all these emails that suddenly happened that involved our supervisors and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I felt like I wasn't doing anything, you know, inappropriate. But yeah, so she just sent out that email, and then Lemp kind of, I think Lemp took it upon himself to sort of say to the email she just sent, like, well, I'm working it out with my, you know, my TAs, and, you know, we've all worked. We worked out with sufficient, you know, sort of situation and sort of how to deal with this, and at least to my satisfaction. And so we sort of got the go ahead for whatever it is that we wanted to do. And so for me, we did not have class that day, and we instead had, we didn't have class that day. Instead, they took the exam, I think. One of them took it Saturday morning, and then some took it Sunday afternoon. One was early, that's all I really remember. But I remember that also continued on to Friday as well. And I remember sort of we all walked, Beth Skubak, who was also teaching 132 at the time, her exam was on that Friday. So she sort of showed up for everything, like for the protests, and she sort of, you know, for the march down State Street to the Capitol. And then she took off as soon as we got to the Capitol because she went back to proctor her exam. Like, she didn't cancel her exam, which, you know, I thought made sense, because if it had happened on Thursday, was sort of the one day that we were very much like, this is when it was going to happen. Like, I think we had more notice on that one, I think. Like, it was going to happen on that day. And then sort of when we sort of decided that we were going to continue it on to Friday, that just kind of felt a little like, okay, well, not every one of us can, like, have 3 days in a row or 2 days in a row, which we just abandon our teaching duties. But yeah, so she went back and proctored, and I think that Friday what I did instead is I just said to my students that, hey, normally I'd have office hours at this time, but instead I'm having, like, you know, be at a coffee shop right by the Capitol, like, come see me there. Which none of them did. I think we're going to, but... but yeah, I think my goal at that point was just to be as visible as I can around the Capitol, and also to sort of let my students know that, you know, I was going to participate in these things, but only as much as it doesn't affect them and their grades and whatnot. There was a lot of things that were discussed afterwards. Sort of this happened over into the weekend, and then sort of the next, we had spring break that was coming up real soon too. There was a lot of things that were sort of imminent, and then there were discussions about all the things that we should be, that we could be doing. And so when the TA finally had a general membership meeting, well, they had a few general membership meetings, I take that back, but they had one right before spring break, and when TGI ended, and then, you know, sort of everybody was still sort of staked out the Capitol, but the TA wasn't officially sort of calling for any TGI yet. They were nonetheless still continuing to encourage people to avoid campus if you can. But I think they were understanding the fact that it couldn't happen for very long, especially if we actually wanted to strike at any point. And so at that point, I think that we had a general membership meeting right before spring break in which there was a discussion about what would a strike look like? What can we do about a strike? And so we sort of discussed, people asked to get some information about like what are different options for actually doing a strike. And I remember they had this general membership meeting, and then sort of in the middle of this meeting, which went on for very long, it was a huge meeting, tons of people who normally aren't there, I think, were there, and there were people that sort of, you know, was very adamant about saying that we need to, like, call for, you know, strongly encourage the TA to call for a TA out of, or a teach out again for the next week or so. And I remember talking to Regina, and we were both in this meeting, both being like, this just can't happen, like, we can't do another week of teach out, like, it just... You know, we had already gone in 2 or 3 days. Like, it's just, we can't. Another week of the experience, like, this was clearly a hassle for us. And it was clear that, like, the person who was suggesting it didn't actually have any teaching responsibilities. Like, but the rest of us who had, especially Regina, who was also teaching, and she was teaching every single day. Like, she was teaching Monday through Friday, like, because she was teaching language classes. So for her, it was much more of an issue. Whereas for me, like, oh, if it just didn't happen to fall on my day, it's fine. But for her, like, any single day we called for a teach out, like, she was going to have an issue with it, like, it was going to conflict with her in some way, and she had to deal with it in some way, shape, or form. And so, kind of that meeting, it became clear that we weren't going to make any rash decisions. Instead, we need to, like, actually, because, and also that it wasn't going to do anything with just the TAs having some kind of, like, teach out or strike action. Like, we needed to at least coordinate with some of the bigger unions.
So going back a little bit, so you said you sent out some emails to your students about kind of rescheduling the exam that was on that Thursday. Did you get replies that were, or was it mostly just kind of business, or were there people that also kind of responded about the protests and either, you know, said something about what they thought of the protests, or, you know, did you have any interactions which were with your students about, you know, the content, I guess, of the protests, or was it mostly just business, you know, about class and stuff?
It was mostly business. It was mostly about class. I feel like I had, the general responses from my students, I feel like, were either they were, purely business, like, okay, whatever, like, they either refrained from giving an opinion, or just, it was very neutral,
mm-hmm.
or it was positive, as in, you know, yes, I agree with this. I also plan to be at the protest kind of thing. But we didn't actually discuss sort of why the protests were happening or, you know, anything along those lines. Mostly just, you know, it was some of the emails I can kind of tell that they were, you know, in support of the protests, and some of the emails were just very neutral. I didn't get anything that were negative in any way. I kind of framed my emails, like my initial email, in such a way that suggested that, like, you know, whatever your opinion is, I'm telling you that it at least matters to me. So that I think it would be difficult for them to sort of respond very negatively without, you know, actively trying to be a negative person. I think with my students, though, sort of having sent out these sort of emails, this email initially, and then in the weeks that followed, it was, my students were, I think, knew that I was somebody that they could talk to about this if they wanted to. And some of them, they didn't all do this. Many of my students really discussed at length anything that happened. But, you know, occasionally I get students that sort of say, hey, do you know when this is happening, when that protest is happening, or, you know, when exactly is that march supposed to happen? And if I had information, I'd tell them. But they sort of knew that I was going to be keeping up to date with what was happening for this, so that they wanted to participate. They knew that I was someone that I could go to, they could go to.
Okay, let's see. So was the teach out stuff, was that you say that was kind of your first kind of involvement with the protests, or did you go to anything on the 14th?
Yeah.
Or the okay.
Yeah, so the 14th was a Monday, and so I didn't have tea, so that was fine. So I showed up on a Monday. And sort of, they were, I think I might have been a little bit late, and my goal was sort of to meet them at the Capitol, at least, but, I mean, they sort of, you know, say, starts at 11, I think I got there at 11:30, and at 11:30, they were literally just starting their march up. So I caught them right, like, I joined them right at the end of that, and marched with them up to the Capitol. And then, you know, we walked around the Capitol, stay there for half an hour, 45 minutes, I'm not sure how long, chanted some things, and then sort of disperse. I'm sure they, I don't know, I feel like some of the people might have gone to do some other things, but we, I left at that point. I think I left around 2 or 3 o'clock. So that was the 14th. That was the Monday. That was sort of the first kind of... That was a protest led by TAA, the IHRUW protest. Yeah, we went into the Capitol, came back out. When the Capitol dropped off all the Valentines, came back out, and then sort of walked around and chanted some things. And they... Yeah, I think we went in, dropped things off, came back out, and then, like, sort of aimed for the governor's sort of window at his office. But yeah, that was the 14th. And then the Tuesday, the 15th, I remember teaching that Tuesday, and then sort of showed up at the Capitol afterwards. Met up with Regina at the Capitol. And, wait, is that what I did? No, I did not. I take that back. I take it back. I showed up on Wednesday. That's what I did. And it was not there on Tuesday at all. On Tuesday was where they started having the long, long meetings I can't remember the name now.
You mean the Joint Finance Committee?
Yes, the Joint Finance Committee.
Okay.
I'm like, I know it's JFC, but what was that actually stand for? Yeah, the long answer, that was on Tuesday, and I was not there for that. I was watching all of it online on WSCI, but I did not actually make it down to the Capitol to sign up to testify. I showed up on Wednesday instead. And then on Wednesday I was there for much of Wednesday, and in that particular room, 300 Northeast, that's where I met up with Regina, and kind of just discussed what was happening, and just general sort of helping out with, like, I didn't do anything very specific, I wasn't given a task or anything, but sort of in general just sort of helping out with whatever it is needed to keep operations running, so like, I went to Walgreens and grabbed some extra, like, universal chargers and adapters and things of that sort, or figuring out, at one point, Regina would go downstairs, and everyone would go out, and we'd, like, hold up signs and walk around and join some of the protests, and Regina eventually... I don't remember if it was that day or 2 days later, but she, you know, would sort of get people to sign up, like, not sign recall petitions yet, but just say that here we would be willing to sign recall petitions and collecting names and signatures. And I remember joining her for part of that. And yeah. But pretty much that week, I was there, starting that Wednesday, I was there pretty much every day afterwards, and stayed fairly late usually, but I hadn't sort of stayed overnight yet. And I think it wasn't until the 26th or something then when they started being talked about, okay, we're going to get kicked out of the Capitol any day now, very soon. That this was going to be our last night. And that was when I was like, okay, I'm going to stay in the Capitol. Like, tonight's going to happen. And at that point, they had already sort of moved us down a few floors. Like, the first couple of nights, like, people slept anywhere, anywhere you find space. And then following that, when I actually got into the Capitol State, they had sort of already limited us to just the first two floors. Like, you know, kept us off the third and fourth. And yeah, that was the first time I sort of stayed there. And it was pretty crowded, like, by that point. You kind of, like, wedge yourself in between two people.
So I remember seeing you a few times in 300 Northeast. Was that, I guess after that first Wednesday, you said you spent some time up there. Was that kind of a base of activities for you? Did you spend a lot of time there, or were you in and out a lot, or what, I don't know, what kind of things were you doing?
I spent a lot of time there, yeah. I think what we were trying to do, and Daisy and I sort of talked about how what we were trying to do was basically organize within our department, keep things up to date within our department, sort of talk to people in our department about, you know, how much they felt like this affected them, what their opinion of it was, and I think it affected all of us as TAs, like, in general, we were all concerned, but I think how involved people wanted to be differed quite a bit. And so, you know, we kind of would come together and come up with a list of people that we felt like were supportive, like actively supportive, and sort of would rank them based on their, I don't know what the other having this list, but the TA sort of wanted us to come up with, like, rank them basically 1 through 5 or something on their level of, like, involvement, like how supportive they are. Along with the professors that we knew. And so, Dave and I kind of went through and sort of gave numbers as we saw fit, but in general, we couldn't tell a lot of times, too. Sometimes in the middle of, like, people were all over the spectrum. It was not just, even that sounds like it was a very linear thing. People were very different. Like, you kind of, they could be anywhere. And sort of at some points, their opinion might be, oh yeah, you know, I'm surprised, but not this part of it, or not that. And it was never clear, that how involved they want to be, or how supportive they were of the TAA in general, or any of the protests that were happening. I feel like some people might be like, oh yeah, you know, I'm totally against the bill, so I don't know that we should have the protests at all, or, oh yes, I'm very much against the bill, but, you know, I don't like what the TAA is doing. Like, just various things like that, that it wasn't clear how to rank them all the time. The ones that were, we did sort of, you know, we could agree on, we was like, okay, let's, you know, assign them the number. But we did draft, so I think this list actually did end up in TA's hands, but I don't know what they did with it. And for us, we also sort of drafted up just an email list of people who wanted to stay up to date on what was happening at the Capitol. With the understanding, of course, that whatever emails we send out was going to be very, you know, much against the bill, like, this was not going to be partial, like, impartial. This was going to be, you know, it was clearly we were biased. But I think we got a list of 40 or 5 or 50 people, I think, on that list. And so we would send out emails occasionally, just sort of updating people on what was happening. And, you know, and I know that people in the department themselves were certainly communicating with each other in a way that sort of said, you know, if they want to participate in this, how getting people to cover for them and things of that sort. And other things that we were doing at that point is, I think the following something, Dave Seal and I were trying to set up, this never panned out, because, again, back in Nam, and I don't know what the hell was happening, but we were trying to set up, actually, because there were some buzz and people sort of discussing about, how do we donate to a recall? Like, And this was very early, before any recalls were things actually. They were asking, like, how would we donate to a recall? And so David C. and I were trying to set this up, and then was like, and then said to, you know, trying to talk to people in TA, like, you guys must know how to do this. Like, somebody must know how to do this. And in general, even if you didn't, like, how can we possibly do this in a way that basically it was going to, you know, send money straight into, like, TA's packet, at least. And they're like, okay, well, here's all the sort of legal ramifications, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, okay. And then ultimately what we needed was basically an account number, I guess. Either an account number or somebody to sign up in TA who's the treasurer basically to sign up for it. And then the person who is actually the treasurer, Peter, we could just never get a hold of him. We could just, Dave and I tried many times, we could never get a hold of him. And finally, many months after, when we did, he kind of said, I don't want to do this. Like, I don't feel comfortable giving them a PayPal address or giving them whatever. We're like, we don't know how to say this. And that we, you know, because that already a couple people had already donated at that point, and it was already up to like $200 or $300. And instead, he was like, I don't think it's worth the risk. And so at this point, I don't know, Dave was sort of in charge of that account. At least he was getting most of the administrative emails, and I don't know if he's still getting them. For a while, he was like, can we do something about this? I just don't feel right about this $300 just sitting there. But yeah, it was... Like, I remember we spent quite a number of, like, hours trying to get this set up and talking to the various people. And eventually they did set up something like the Defend Wisconsin Fund, which is separate. And I think that one was just a much more general, yes, it's donating to this. And, you know, not really specifically donating to recall or anything. But it was, I think I had sort of started out, because I remember talking to someone else, when we first started this, I was talking to someone else about it, and TA about it, and then what they wanted to set up was somebody to, some kind of fund to donate, in which, you know, towards trash collection or general sort of like upkeeping of the capital, which was not political. And so that didn't actually need to go through the PAC or anything of the sort, whereas ours was something that did. And so when it became clear that we had different goals and that theirs were going to be easier set up, we sort of split off. And I think what theirs got set up was, I know there were a few going on, and I don't remember if that ended up being the Defend Wisconsin that they did actually eventually go through the PAC, or if that ended up being something completely different. But yeah, so I mean, there was internet in that room, and that was a major thing. And so sort of anything that we had to do online, that organizing, sending out emails, anything involving Google Groups, we had to be in that room. I mean, technically, all the Capitol had the internet, but TAA set up their own internet in that room. That was like one of the first things they did in the first couple days, was set up their own server internet. Yes, I spent quite a number amount of time in there.
So did you also, you were, you know, sending out emails and trying to keep people in the math department kind of updated on things that were going on. Was there also kind of, I guess kind of a two-way flow? So like, right, you were sending things out. Were you also getting things, or, you know, hearing back from people in the math department, or how much dialogue did you have with other people in the department about these things?
Yeah, I feel like people weren't, like, I was sending out email and people didn't really email back. I mean, with any sort of comments or opinions, it was more along the lines like, thanks for letting us know, or, you know, I appreciate this. Nothing sort of along the lines of like, man, I can't believe that happened, that's crazy, or like, nothing that sort of showed what their opinion of it was pretty, all felt pretty sort of official. Outside of the emails, I sort of, you know, when I did talk to people about it, the way I remember it, and I could totally be wrong, it felt like it was, we were so involved in it in such a way that I think anything that wasn't quite that level of talking about it, it just felt like, oh, we were kind of avoiding it. Not specifically avoiding it. I feel like it was all sort of like, maybe everything happened to them, and they were all in agreement that, yes, this is terrible. I can't believe this is happening. And, you know, we joke about it and stuff, but nothing that was, weren't really discussing any of the actual issues. Occasionally I get asked people would ask me for clarification about what exactly the rules were for this, something becoming a law or becoming a committee, or what exactly was happening, or at some point when there started being discussions and talks of lawsuits, we were asking, like, what would we sue on, kind of thing. And so I did get people sort of ask me for more information, but I don't feel like I really got the opinions were generally supportive, and that was it. Like, and not, you know, nobody was very explicitly clear about what they were, you know, supportive of or what they were unhappy with or against. Like, I think it was just a general sort of feeling that they were supportive when discussion of, like, what was happening and, you know, sometimes clarification of the things.
Okay, let's see. So maybe next. So maybe taking a little bit of a step back. So had you done much with the TAA before the protests?
No, nothing at all, I think. Other than showing up for their orientation committee events and having free beer, like, other than that, there was nothing that I had really done with the TAA at all. When I was telling Regina too, that my first sort of general membership meeting that I went to was during the protests, and when I first got to UW too, I was sort of avoiding the TA altogether, because when you first show up as a first year, you have these sort of, you meet all, you know, you meet the professors, you meet the TA coordinator, and they have this sort of long, like, long day of, like, meetings and stuff. And one of them was with a TAA, and I remember being like, I'm gonna leave now. I'm gonna take off now. I'm gonna go to lunch. So in general, I was sort of avoiding the TAA when I first got to UW. And not because I didn't believe that the TAA should be there, and not because I didn't believe that we should have a union, or what our union was necessarily doing. I just didn't want to be recruited. I just did not want to be involved in it. I always felt like they were actively trying to get people to be more involved, which I understand. But yeah, that was not something I wanted to do. I think sort of when the protests started, or actually when the bill first came out, it was kind of like, then I was very carefully. So the TA sends out an email every once in a while. I never read them. But once this bill came out, then I was very carefully watching for a TAA email, knowing that they were clearly going to do something, and, you know, some kind of protest organizing, that I wanted to make sure that I was at. So my level of involvement with TAA prior to the protest was very, very minimal, if at all, yeah.
So what, maybe this might be hard to, I don't know, quantify in a way, but what made you decide to start doing stuff with them once the protests started?
So TAA is not something that, I don't love the TA. They don't run the way I would like them to run. And, you know, every general membership meeting takes forever. but I very strongly believe in the existence of our union. And that was part of sort of our more recent discussions as well. But I was telling someone else that it wasn't all the other things in the bill, you know, were damaging, they were terrible. But the whole of the bill itself, very little actually affected me. I mean, we had to pay more. But that, in general, was not something that I would have came out to a protest for. Like, having to pay more and things that sort, okay, these things happen. You know, said fees go up. Like, this is sort of, you know, part of being a grad student sometimes when tuition goes up and things of that sort. It just, it happens. And so you're, that was not something I was going to come out to protest for. It was really the difficulty in recertifying the union and having to certify the union that way, and also the elimination of collective bargaining altogether. Those were the things that I think got me really upset and angry with the bill. And those were the sort of the main driving reasons for why I came out to protest and got involved. And so it was that I didn't, even though I don't always agree with the union does and how they run and things of that sort, it's, I very strongly believe in their existence. And so sort of when it was threatened, then it became important to me to be involved to keep it going. Because it was almost like, whereas before they were going to exist because, you know, they didn't really need, like, they were going to exist, there were going to be people involved and it was going to be fine. But all of a sudden when that was sort of taken away, then what they were really going to have to count on was the strength of the people that they were representing. And so to me, that was the main reason why I felt like I now had to be involved if I wanted my union to stay intact. Because, you know, the difficulty to recertify with how little they can actually bargain on, like, they would very quickly dissolve if people weren't actively sort of involved in it. And so that was sort of the trigger for me.
Let's see. I might be inclined to maybe just about stop here, at least for today. Instead of, yeah, I guess diving into something else, but I don't know, maybe before we stop, is there anything else you want to, I don't know, just kind of add for now?
Okay, let me say this. The activity since protest, because in case I don't remember this next time, I was saying that it's the right, the thing that was most important to me that sort of, you know, triggered for me was the elimination of collective bargaining, the proposal to recertify. Basically, it felt like they were trying to get rid of our unions, you know, anyway they can without actually saying we're going to make the unions illegal. And it sort of recently with the recent TA reunion discussions about endorsing recall candidates, that was part of the discussion, is that, you know, what is actually going to be important for us when we're discussing who we recall, or sorry, well, who we're going to endorse for a recall candidate. Because, right, we were very clear of the fact that a year ago when these protests happened, people were very energized. And so it was a discussion about what exactly was it that energized people. And, you know, and it wasn't clear that we really understood what it was. In a way, when the protest happened with the bill, it was almost easier because it was something that they had sort of solidified for us. We all care about something very different sometimes, like, and I think the people who came out to protest all care about something. To them, the most important thing in that bill was all different. Right, some people cared very much about the way that, you know, there were going to be fire sales of these power plants, and some people cared a lot more about other various aspects of it. Not everybody cared about the unions, but because these legislature and Governor Walker had so conveniently put this all into one bill for us that we can, you know, sort of say yes. I mean, I think he did that unification for us. And so when they were sort of discussing, when the TA was having this meeting discussing who to endorse as a recall candidate, I think it became very contentious because it was clear that even in that room of about 100, that we had very differing opinions about what was the most important thing. At the end of it, we were all kind of, you know, after having a very contentious meeting and discussion about it, sort of all said, okay, well, I think we can all agree at the very least that we would like to recall Governor Walker. I'm like, yes. But we couldn't agree on much more than that. So which is why there was actually no endorsement. But, yeah.
Okay. It is Thursday, May 3rd. This is Jason Mirko, and we're doing the second interview with Christine Lian for the UW-Madison Oral History Program, in particular the Capitol Protest Series. And this interview is taking place in the math department at UW-Madison. Okay, yeah, so let's start out with the night you slept at the Capitol. And
okay.
Yeah, tell me about that.
So it was only one night, and it was one night where, I had every single night prior to that, I'd sort of been there until 1 or 2 a.m. I just never sort of made the effort to kind of bring all my stuff over there and then, like, actually camp out. But this was sort of, I think it was about a week and a half after we've already sort of, staked out the Capitol. Like, people were already there, already settled in. And at this point, they had already started to move people from, like, the third and fourth floor, limiting them down to just the first and second floors. And so we knew it was imminent that we were going to get kicked out soon. And so I made it a point to stay that night. And I think because of it, I was not there. I kind of left around 1 or 2 p.m., whereas usually I'm there so much later, and then went home, gathered some stuff, and then had some food, and then showed up again around, it was either 6 or 8. There was at a certain point when they wouldn't let any more people in either.
Hmm.
Like, after a certain hour, they wouldn't let any more people in. So we made sure we got in before that hour. And then they sort of closed everything down. And it was, I think it was that, I want to say that, no, I don't think so. I want to say maybe that was a night where one of the other unions had also made it a point to stay over, either the Madison Police Union or possibly the Firefighters Union, but I'm not absolutely sure of that. Or maybe one of the Teamsters Union. But that one I can't be sure. I can't be sure it was that night or the night before. It was one of those. When I showed up at the Capitol, it was always, I kind of go in, and then I would either head straight for 300 Northeast, or I would oftentimes I'd make it into the Capitol, just sort of be rallying outside. So, because inside just, there was always a lot going on. So this was the first time in a couple days in which I had actually spent time, like, sort of in the rotunda itself. And I remember walking in, sort of just being amazed at how many signs had gone up in a matter of, like, 3 or 4 days. Like, it was really, really quick, like, because I was there just a week before, and you know, there were some signs, but it wasn't to the level that it was at that night. Like, it was just tremendous. Like, the whole Capitol definitely felt very transformed. And I remember in particular, sort of like, I showed up and then we kind of found a spot that we settled down on, which was not too difficult, but it was a little bit difficult. It was a little bit like, okay, this is sort of right by where these two hallways intersect, and it's not really the best spot to be in, but, you know, it's a spot. And there were plenty of, like, they would have signs for outlets, and they would have signs for here are the restrooms. And I don't remember, I think the internet was still working at that point, so we were all able to still use the internet. So we kind of just hung out, but after a while every once in a while we'd sort of get up and walk around, just to sort of explore. And even though they weren't letting anybody stay on the third and fourth floor, I think at that point you could still walk up there. And I remember at one point when, I think it was after midnight, when things sort of started to settle down a little bit, people were going to bed, walking by the governor's office and just seeing that his walls just plastered with signs. And they weren't like, sort of like everywhere else in the rotunda, they were sort of, had signs that were like homemade signs of varying quality and like varying like sort of things and colors. But outside of like the governor's office, the signs were just like loose leaf paper like this, and with things printed on there, and it was just like printed statements of people, letters or like address to the governor, and it was just the entire wall was covered like that. It was just, it felt very solemn and somber, because also nobody was allowed to stay around the Capitol. So everyone else was a lot of things going on, Trump circles and stuff. But right outside the governor's office, there was, it was just very peaceful and very quiet, and like that sort of stuck with me, like just sort of how solemn that felt. And yeah, it was, I think we left the Capitol the next morning around 5 or 6 a.m. because sleeping on marble floors, it gets kind of cold. I remember at one point there was, because there was just plenty of signs around, so oftentimes people also just had cardboard, like, because people will bring cardboard and markers to make things. And so the spot that we found had signs and it had a cardboard, just a blank piece of cardboard, which I eventually sort of pulled over and slept on it just to keep some like sort of distance between myself and the marble floor. But yeah, it got pretty cold that night, and it was also very, it was surprisingly, I don't know, like people just sort of knew when, maybe they had to sort of go around and be like, okay, now it's like, you know, lights off and like, you know, time to go to bed, everybody be quiet. So like sort of by about 11:30 or 12, like people just, you just noticed that the noise level dimmed, like, and it was pretty quiet actually around like, by the time it was a little bit past midnight, it was started to be really very quiet, and people were moving about very quietly. And so it wasn't like, because we were a little bit afraid of that when we first showed up around. Because around like 8 o'clock, they were still going very strong, the drum circle, and it was still very loud. So we were a little bit like, okay, this might be going on all night, we have no idea what's going to convince people to quit. But yeah, no, but like, the drum circle stopped by 10, and then by about 11:30 midnight, like, it was just in general, knew that this was, you know, other, even if they weren't ready to, you know, sleep yet, like other people were about to go to sleep. And so it was just a very nice general level of respect, and it was really cool sort of going through and reading the signs, posters and stuff that people had up. It was I'm very creative, and they're just very, very different. Like, it just, a lot of it reminded me of the Berlin Wall, actually, when I visited, like, and on the eastern side, sort of the way that they would paint these sort of messages and signs on there, like, that's kind of what it felt like to me when walking along it. And yeah.
Okay. So wait, did you go with other people?
I went with Matt.
Okay.
There were two of us.
And
yeah, then I also, when I walked around too, I saw a lot of people. Like, I saw Annette there. I think I saw somebody. Who else did I see there? There's somebody else I saw there too. Now I can't remember. I remember seeing Annette. Yeah, it was just people there. They had like a little knitters circle. I think somewhere on the second or third floor. I don't think she stayed at night. I think she eventually left. But they had a little knitter circle there. So I ran into her there. But yeah, people were just sort of finding all kinds of things and reasons to be in the Capitol. Like, it really was, that really was the mindset that we were going to stay here as long as they were going to let us. And, you know, if they didn't kick us out, we were going to stay here. Yeah.
Okay, so how about right after the Capitol was locked? A few days later, how did that change the kind of stuff you were doing, or did it?
It did. Sort of. Like, it definitely made that, I think, the protests feel somewhat decentralized. Like, whereas before, it was like, you know, you knew where the protests happening, you knew there was a Capitol, and also, like, you sort of knew where Command Center was, right? 300 Northeast is where TA was staking out and where they were sort of holding everything. And so once we got kicked out, that sort of felt, it did feel very decentralized. It felt like you didn't know where you could go basically. Or if you want to know information about things that were happening throughout the day or events throughout the day, or in general, what was happening, whether with getting back into the Capitol or anything of that sort, like, you couldn't, it felt harder to kind of get that information. I mean, there was social media, which was fine when everybody was still attached to social media, but if you actually wanted to talk to somebody about it, it was hard to know, like, where you go to find someone to talk to about it in person. And I think because of that, I ended up, I usually would be staked out somewhere around the Capitol, like at a coffee shop or somewhere, and I would usually be constantly online, like, reading about various things. And I remember that Isthmus had a very good sort of live feed, just of people's, like, Twitter posts, or, and then there were a few of us that were just sort of reading the news and posting things as we were reading the news, like, into this sort of, it was just constantly feed. And that was actually a very useful resource in keeping track of things that were happening. And so, because there would be several things that would happen throughout the day. Like, even though we were locked out of Capitol, there were still people there that would be outside protesting as we let in. I remember walking by the Capitol and seeing all the post-it notes that were on the doors.
Oh, yeah.
And so there were still protests that were happening outside, and the people who would be, you know, started bringing tents and staying outside. And so you would have people there, and also the court case was happening. Like, they were filing a court case and things of that sort, to try to get back into the Capitol. The Capitol should stay open. And so you would have, the Isthmus had this very nice feed that, like, there would be people in both areas that was basically constantly twittering about what was going on, or, you know, what the judge had just said, or what the defense had just said, or what the prosecution had just argued. So it was very nice sort of to read that and keep track of everything that was happening on the ground. And that's usually how I sort of kept track. And then eventually, when sort of, I think by about, it was mid-March that we had spring break that year. I feel like it was mid-March.
Yeah, I did check on that. I think it was like March 12th to 20th or something like that.
Yeah, so. So we had a week kicked out before that, I think. And, I remember going to a general membership meeting shortly before that, and sort of discussing what should the plan be after this. But kind of because of spring break, I felt like TA didn't really have a very solid sort of plan about what was going to happen, like how we were going to keep this going past spring break. And sort of after spring break, it did kind of feel like things had died down a little bit. Like the protests itself had died down a bit, like. I think at that point I had been let back into the Capitol, maybe, or shortly after I'd been let back into the Capitol, but not for overnight stays. And so there were still plenty of people there, but it just, the level of the size of the protest was that felt smaller. And I do remember at that point, sort of, after that, right about that point, sort of after spring break and beginning of April, that's when I started going to the Stuco meetings more. And then talking to the other stewards about, okay, we're getting, you know, tons of emails and tons of meetings. Which one should we actually go to? How do we divide it up so that we can, you know, go to some things and keep each other updated, but not have to, like, you know, spend tons and tons of time in these meetings? Because this is also shortly after the general membership meeting that just went on for hours. That one went on for several hours. And mostly because it was a discussion. This is the one right before spring break. The discussion was about how were we going to keep the momentum going and whether or not we should strike. Like, that was part of the discussion for that membership meeting. And it was clear that because it was such a huge meeting, and in particular for a lot of people who had never been to one of these meetings, so they really weren't aware of how the rules of this meeting, I guess, should go, or just in general, how our union operates. And, I mean, I certainly didn't know. This was my first general membership meeting. But, you know, they had handouts explaining what strike actions meant, and they were, you know, I thought the TA co-presidents at that time did a fairly good job at sort of explaining, like, you know, what it would mean to strike, like, what would have to happen. And yet, like, we still had members sort of go up and be like, I say we strike now. With the understanding that, like, no, just explain, we have to form a strike committee, we have to actually explore our options and things of that sort. It doesn't just sort of happen like that. And we have to actually vote on it. And with everybody being aware that they're at the next meeting that this is being voted on. And so we had a lot of that, and I think that's what dragged out the meeting, and the co-presidents weren't so great about being like, no, that's completely off topic. Like, it's not even allowed. But it was kind of that meeting that went out for so long, and I remember like being in the back with Dave still being like, oh my gosh, like we need to move this along. Like this is just dragging on, and we feel like we're not getting anywhere with this. I think at the end of the meeting, all we really decided was that we're going to form a strike committee to at least explore the options. And that kind of convinced me and Dave Seal and George and Mona to sort of talk about, okay, like a couple weeks later to talk about, okay, we have all these meetings, let's discuss what we can actually like afford to go to, and how to divide up the work sort of between all of us. Which I think sort of continued to the rest of the semester, but we certainly didn't do it again in the fall. I've been to a couple GMMs since, but I don't know that they have at all.
Okay, let's see. Okay, so I guess let's get into the TA stuff maybe a little more. I guess maybe let's talk about the Stewards Council next. So what, how did you decide to get involved with that?
It was in the middle of the height of the protests. Dave Seal was sort of, Dave Seal and I were sort of talking about some stuff, and sort of was coming to me about some things, and then at one point he was like, hey, you should join this, I'm on it. And I said, okay, sure. And I think he had already sort of, the email was sort of like, send it to me, and then CC'd the person who'd add me to the Stewards Council and said, hey, you should be on this, I'm already on it. And so I felt like there was no, I couldn't really actually be like, no, that's okay. I sort of got added on. But I wanted to be, I don't know, I think I wanted to be more, I had no idea what it meant to be a steward was a thing. And that was why I was hesitant about it. I wanted to be more involved with what the TA was doing, but not, like, I feel like I liked what I was doing, which is that I didn't have a set job or a set sort of position. I got to just sort of pick and choose what it is that fit, what it is that I felt like, I could help out with. And so I was somewhat hesitant about being a steward. And even now, I don't know how I feel about it. Even now, I'm thinking about maybe I should stop being a steward. I do like being on their email list. Sort of, I do get information about various things that happen, and it's nice to sort of show up and like help out in that way on the Stewards Council. But I don't feel like it's the right sort of spot for me either. But I understand nobody else is doing it anyway, and then the other steward seems to be, nobody's sort of come to me and said, you need to do this, and so I'm like, alright, well, right now it's just a title. And I still get to do whatever it is that I feel like fits for the TAA. But yeah, I chose to get involved, or that it was really, Dave Seal was like, you should do this, and I said, okay, sure, why not?
So after you got added to the email list and sort of became a steward, were there meetings that you started going to like right away, like still during the protests, or did you start doing more stuff with that later on?
Later on, it was by April. It was sort of, they weren't holding Stewards Council meetings because just of everything,
sure,
during the height of the protest, they weren't even trying, which made complete sense. Like, even their GMMs that was supposed to happen, like, oh shit, we have a GM. Even that happened in such a way. Like, the very, very, actually, the very first one that I had actually gone to was actually in 300 Northeast, in the height of the protest. And it was, like, sort of this, you know, this meeting happened, and it was the shortest meeting GM I've ever been to, because an hour later, they had to say, oh, we have to go to this other meeting with the AFT. And so, like, it had to end. There was no, like, way around it. And that was, and that, even that, that was sort of like, it felt like a very rushed kind of meeting, mostly just getting information out. And I think because it was just, things were so crazy back then. So certainly the Stewards Council wasn't even trying to meet. And so it wasn't until sort of after the protests had died down some that they were like, okay, by the way, these Stewards Council meetings. And that was, I started going to a couple of those. It was, after they were like, oh yeah, we should be doing these things. But I haven't gone at all of this. Sort of the first, the few I went to, I wasn't really sure also what the purpose of it was. And it just, the couple I've gone to, like, it sort of, they kind of became art projects. We were basically making posters and armbands, like in screen printing armbands. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't mind doing that, but I think I felt like my time could be been better spent. I mean, I understood those things that needed to be done, but I felt like my time could be better spent than sort of doing these art projects. And so sort of after those couple of meetings, I didn't really attend to them anymore. Yeah, I did, that spring, I think. Yeah, that spring I also was doing with the TAA, their elections, when they have to elect for new officers. And I was on the, I don't know if it's a committee, but it was part of the people who were like, basically sent out the emails about like, oh, and basically said that, you know, here are the candidates, here's how you vote, and like sending out those sort of emails and then counting the vote. Mm-hmm. And we were doing that spring. But that's about it's more or less what I did with TA that spring. A couple of steward council meeting and then sort of doing the elections and checking membership and things of that sort. And that was, yeah, like, so sort of that, like, when the elections part, like, I felt like, okay, that was a worthwhile use of my time. Whereas, I don't know, the art projects I was through current meetings, just, I don't know. I just wanted us to be talking about something. I wanted us to sort of have some kind of discussion about what things are, why we're doing this, or what's the use of this. Because it felt a little bit senseless to me. When we were doing these art projects, it felt a little bit senseless to me. I was like, well, I don't need to be here doing this. I can be doing this elsewhere. Like, but yeah.
So you mentioned that with Dave Seal and George Brown, mm-hmm. and there's someone else you mentioned.
Tamona.
What was the name?
Tamona.
Oh, Tamona. Okay, yeah. So you guys like discussed at some point kind of divvying up like
mm-hmm.
various TAA events or meetings to go
mm-hmm.
to. What I don't know if there's more to talk about there, but is there anything to kind of expand on in terms of how you guys were coordinating?
We sort of coordinated because the Stuco meetings technically happen once a week, technically, which is quite a bit. And so we sort of, since there were the four of us, we said, well, why don't we decide what week of the month we'll take and then split it up that way. So, you know, somebody from the math department is always represented. So we sort of said, okay, I'll take the first Sunday of the month or the second Sunday. I don't remember what I said. You know, this was like, this was already like beginning or middle of April, so there weren't that many meetings left. And then the GMM, I think we said, well, you know, we should all try to make the GMMs, which happens once a month, but, you know, if we can't, at least let other people know so that we can at least make sure some one of us is there. And then the goal was that after each meeting, whether it was to her, just send out a short summary about what had happened. Just no kind of information in general to the other three people. And I remember going to, so for the rest of the semester, I definitely kept up with, you know, went to a couple of student meetings, sent out a couple of emails, and then I think they got busy, so I never heard from them again. So that was that. But yeah, and I think come fall, I think nobody really. George, I think, did. George is the only one who sort of kept up with the TAA. I don't know if he's been going to Stupa meetings at all, though. But I certainly haven't heard from George either about, like, things that are happening in TAA.
Okay, so how about sort of overall managing time during the protests? Since you were, you know, spending so much time at the Capitol, how did you juggle, you know, different things that were going on?
I lost a lot of time at the Capitol. Like, a good chunk of my semester. I remember sort of talking to a friend, like, the beginning of April and being like, yeah, can't believe it's April. Like, the semester has been, like, it's felt like, it really did feel like it was just a protest for most of it. And there was very little that semester that I actually remember, other than the protests. So yeah, I lost a lot of time at the Capitol. And I mean, not just at the Capitol itself necessarily, but like, I was just following, like, just spent a lot more time reading the news and things of that sort, like knowing what was going on and what the next steps were, what we were planning to do about this, how the recalls were gonna happen and things of that sort. And so it was, I think, just for the, and really the height of the protests, just a lot of things got put on hold. A lot of things I just didn't do. I mean, I still went and taught, and, you know, the things I had to do with teaching, I did. But in general, everything else kind of got dropped. It wasn't until maybe mid-March that I got picked back up that I sort of said, okay, now I do need to. I can't just have an entire semester where it's just this. So yeah, it was, I did lose a lot of time to it. Pretty much the only commitment that I sort of maintained was teaching, because I had to keep teaching. Like, there was no way around that. But yeah, I mean, it was really 2 to 3 weeks before we were kicked out. And so those were the 2 or 3 weeks in which just, like, I would show up to teach, but, you know, grading that I had to do and things of that sort. And it was actually easier for me, probably, in the sense that that was not my first semester teaching this class. Like, I sort of taught this class for a couple semesters, and so I had a lot of my prep work already done. If it had been my first semester teaching this class, it would have been a lot harder to manage time. But because I had a lot of my prep work done, you know, I was much easier to sort of just show up and teach and not have to spend a lot of time prepping. But during the sort of height of the protest, in the two and a half weeks, and I forget how long that we were actually staking at the Capitol, like, no grading got done. Like, nothing, none of my own research got done, like, nothing got done. It really was just spending time at the protest itself. It wasn't until sort of after that that I was like, okay, I do have to sort of do some things about this teaching. And then after spring break, I was like, okay, you know, I need to now actually devote large chunks of time to my research that I should have been doing the last 4 weeks. Also for me too, right around beginning of April, mid-April, my grandma passed away. And so also around that time, I just didn't pay any more attention to any of these protests, sort of right after that. Like, right when I found out, and then until I went home for the funeral and everything, I just, that was where my level of involvement dropped off significantly.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I was dealing with other stuff.
Okay, so how about any other activities since the protests, in terms of, I mean, right, you already talked about doing stuff with Stucco and the TAA officer elections. Is there any other stuff that you've done since
since the protests?
No, not really. No, voting. A couple of general membership meetings, especially the one with talking about who to endorse for the upcoming recall to governor. Signing recall petitions. Other than that, no, I haven't really done anything else sort of political or involving with the TAA. There was the protest not that long ago in March, beginning of March, where it was the anniversary of them having passed this,
right.
This part of the bill. And I showed up for that protest and walked around, and also went into the Capitol. That was the first time I've been in the Capitol since the whole protest and getting kicked out. And it was, I have forgotten sort of like what that Capitol felt like. And it's also like very, I remember you commenting during the middle of the protest about like how easy was it to get turned around in the Capitol, like trying to find 300 Northeast was an ordeal. And then I'm like, oh, you know, I kind of figured it out. But sort of, you know, a year later, I still turned around. Like I was like walking around third floor trying to find 300 Northeast, and I didn't remember it was 300. But I didn't remember it was Northeast. I'm like, was it like this hallway? It was much easier to recognize during the protest when they had like food and things, like all these people outside. But yeah, like when all that changed and all the signs came down and everything, like it's sort of back to the Capitol. I had to walk around a little bit and be like, I think it was here. Like this hallway looks familiar. But it was still, like, the Capitol definitely now feels very, as a building, definitely feels very different to me now. Sort of before, I would walk right through it, and it was, you know, it was a nice building, it was pretty, I liked exploring. But now it just has so much more meaning when I walk through it. Like, just, like, even the simple thing that I would go through and I would, like, touch the walls, I'm like, yeah, this is where the signs were. And going up to, where people were lined up outside testifying, and like just recalling that, and like, and you recognize sort of all the senators' names and the ones who had gotten recalled and things of that, and who we were trying to recall, and just remembering kind of the signs on the doors, the post-its, it just felt, and where we sort of camped out, where people were camped out, and how each sort of little nook and cranny, like recalling how all those felt and seemed during the protest, it held a lot more sentiment and memories than before, where it was just a pretty building.
Okay, so maybe backing up a little bit, are there any, do you have any particular memories about, the general membership meetings that you went to during, let's say, mainly focus on, like, during the protests or shortly after? Any memories from those that kind of stand out?
I remember the one that was happening in 300 Northeast, and that one was very, like I said, that was a very short GMN, surprisingly short, and I kind of thought that was my first one, I kind of thought that was how they were all going to go. But that was a lot about getting information out, about like, you know, here's what's happening, here's what we're doing, you know, here's what we're trying to do, and that was sort of still, it was not a very organized meeting, but I remember feeling like that was a very productive meeting because I felt like I got a lot of information out of it. And then it dispersed. And then the one that happened right before spring break, that one, I just remember that one being very, very long, and at the end of which, it became clear that nobody really understood in the meeting hall itself, like, what, like, sort of what we were doing. Like, throughout the meeting, it seemed like people got lost, like what we were trying to do, what was the motion that we were trying to vote on or not vote on. It was a very big meeting, and it was very clear that this was the biggest meeting that they've sort of ever had. And I remember that they just, there was a sense that I got from some of the officers that they weren't quite sure about, like, as a union, I feel like we're very disorganized in the way that we don't really know that much about our own bargaining unit. Sort of people within our bargaining unit really don't quite understand what it is life is like for other grad students and other departments. I remember there was somebody sort of suggesting that we should, basically, that we should have another teach out. Like, have another teach out, like, tomorrow or, you know, next week or something. And I remember I was staying next to Regina at the time, and Regina was very upset about this because she was teaching 5 days a week. And even when I heard this, I'm like, I can't manage another teach out. Like, I only, you know, it only affected me one day, but that one day was then became a significant thing on my time. Like, I can't manage another teach out. And certainly my students were completely unhappy with it to begin with. And they didn't want to do it to my students again. And Regina was teaching, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. She was like, I've already, like, you know, she's already missed much more than I have, like, two or three days now. And she's like, you know, I can't do another teach out. Like, that's not going to happen. And it was clear that the person who had sort of suggested it hadn't been affected by teach out, either because they weren't teaching or because every single time that we had, you know, call for one, it didn't actually conflict with them. So it did, because he was just very flippant about it. Like, it wasn't sort of a serious decision. And it was those kind of discussions, that was kind of back and forth that sort of, I remember being like, I feel like we don't really understand each other at all. Like, because nobody shows up to these general manager meetings. We don't actually hear that varying opinions of our bargaining unit. Like, sort of the same sorts of people that show up and not actually what a bargaining unit looks like, which is very different, and people with very different jobs, including project assistants and research assistants. And for them, having a teach out was much easier to deal with than people who actually have teaching appointments. And I remember thinking that there was something about it, because it was so democratic. It's a very democratic union. Our union is very democratic. It's, you know, we vote on everything. That there was some amount of it that I felt like, I remember feeling like, I wish there was more organization. There's a lot to be said about it being so democratic, which is great, but I felt like because the protests was so huge, the protests themselves were so huge, and TEA, the union itself, really was kind of, we were really kind of the ones that sort of started it, that kind of led it, that I think we wanted to see more leadership in general. And there was a sense that I got that the majority of people who had shown up to this general membership meeting kind of was showed up because we were looking for direction, for what should we be doing next, what is our next step. And I think the TA and, you know, the officers and the exec board, that what they normally do is, right, I mean, this is great in normal sort of conditions, is that they said, you guys are the union, you guys decide what as together, like, what we should do next, like, what our next step should be. Which is great in normal conditions. In normal conditions, when we're actually union, when our, you know, we are actually certified and things of that sort, that's great to be able to sort of show up and say, here's what I want my union to do, and then we get to vote on it democratically. But during the protests, really, I felt like the majority of people who had shown up to this general membership meeting were instead looking for more directions, more sort of, for the TA says, here's our plan of action, here is what we would like you guys to do next. Because we were very, I think the general feeling was just that we were very excited is not quite the right word, energized is a better word. We were very energized and, you know, wanted to keep the protests going, wanted some change to happen. And that during we were for a meeting, I think the bill had already passed, and it was sort of like, we, and we wanted to know, like, what should the next step be? What should we do with the next step? How do we, you know, how do we push for this? How do we gain things back?
Mm-hmm.
But instead, I think that meeting, the e-board was more like, well, let's decide as a union what you do. I think I dragged it out because I don't think that any of us sort of came to that meeting thinking that, oh, we should come up with a plan of action, instead of thinking that we would like know what that plan of action is going to be.
How about, I don't know, just other general strong memories from during the protests? You know, particular conversations you had stand out, or, I don't know, just other general things that stand out in your mind?
I remember, well, there were a few things, I guess. There was a lot about the protest that sort of was difficult to sort of manage. And I sort of understood how difficult it was to manage such a large group of people. Like, there was a lot of effort to keep things peaceful and for fights to not break out and things of that sort. But it really just takes one instigator. And then all hell breaks out. Like, it's, and I remember sort of Mason visited at some point during that time, and then sort of he was going around like just yelling things, like, because he thought it was fun, you know. And I understand it's enjoyable because the whole like protest was just crazy, and I understand that was, you know, that was a very sort of exciting thing to be in the middle of. But for me as well, because we were also presenting an image to everybody else, and that as public union employees, like public employees, we wanted the public on our side, basically. We wanted people who, you know, maybe didn't have an opinion to be on our side. And so I was very sensitive to him possibly offending people. I don't think he intended to, but just sort of anything that might have come across in that way, I was very sensitive to it. Because I felt like we had already been pushing our limits with staking out the Capitol and sort of staying in there and not leaving, I think was already turning a lot of people off. And also with some of the teachers calling in sick, like mass majority of the teachers calling in sick and schools having to close. I think we were already starting to turn people off. We were already sort of pushing those limits. And so I was pretty sensitive to when, you know, just people were just being obnoxious in their way, or, you know, with saying things that might come off as obnoxious to other people, that I was particularly sensitive to that. And that it was hard to sort of just keep, I don't know, I feel like it was hard at times too to make sure that people understood why we were doing this and whether or not it might be appropriate for them to say things. Like, there at one point during the protests, I get a phone call from Dave Seal being like, "Hey, have you read these emails?" I'm like, "I don't know what you're talking about, because I have not been reading the emails. I've been in the Capitol, like, actually protesting." So I'm like, "I don't know what you're talking about." So he tells me this. I'm like, you know, he tries to explain to me over the phone, and it's really loud in the Capitol, so I can barely hear him. I kind of get the sense that, okay, something had happened where somebody had been sending out this email to the department, and Joe had said something, and then, you know, he's like, "I don't know what to do about this." And I'm like, "Well, do you want me to talk to her?" Like, she's like, "Well," he's like, "Well, you should be careful if you talk to her, because she's just gonna, like, be careful because she might, you know, just repeat what you said to the entire department," kind of thing. I'm like, "Okay, all right, well, I'm not sure what you want me to do here," right? Like, I'm like, I can barely hear you. I barely understand the situation. I'm not sure what you want me to do here. And then eventually I did read the actual emails. Eventually I finally sat back down and I actually read through just a long chain of emails and understanding what was happening. And I understood, like, why Dave was concerned. And it was the same sort of thing where just this thing that could have been small and maybe dealt with easily just suddenly got blown out very quickly. Like, Joe was very... This was about the teach-out, I think, too. Because Joe was upset about the fact that one of the TA members, I sort of said, I guess at the meeting when they were talking about doing the teach-out, the general feeling that she got from it was that, you know, we would be fine. That, you know, it was a strike action, but that we would be fine. That, you know, Biddy Martin was going to protect us, basically. That nothing would actually happen to us. So she was like, okay, we're, you know, that's no problem. And then later, maybe after the meeting, she, in corresponding with somebody else from the TAA, with Adrian kind of said, well, you know, you should understand that it is still an illegal action, but it's still something that, you know, we can't actually get anybody to, like, we can't say that somebody's actually endorsed that. I don't think that's something you should count on, but, you know, if you send an email to your department, you know, here's the language that I used, and sort of sent her a copy of the email. And then Joe would sort of forward that to the entire department. You know, one with her comments about it being like, you know, I wish the TA had been more clear about this and just basically complaining about it. But, like, it was those kind of things that Dave, I think, was concerned about, because it started to set a very negative tone. And not only a negative tone, but I think it made the rest of us have a difficult time with the teach-out, because I think some of us who, you know, because in general, we handle our own teaching abilities, right? We have a supervisor we report to, but in general, we're pretty good about handling our teaching ability, like, responsibilities. Like, things that we need to do, we get done. If we need to, you know we're not supposed to cancel class if we don't have to, but we can always let students go early. Like, those kind of things, we know what we're allowed and not allowed to do. And so it was... sort of when Joe started saying this out, being like, and demanding that the department sort of support us, I think suddenly became an issue, because I think Dave was like, I feel like we're not just, now we're also antagonizing a lot of our department, which didn't seem to be necessary. Like, we could have handled this. Like, we could have participated in teach out as we seem appropriate. We could have discussed with our lecturers, you know, saying that this is what we want to do, and, you know, and because we had gotten the general sense that most of the professors in our department were quite supportive of what we were doing out there, and understood that it was an important issue to us. And maybe Mark Castillo, who sort of was, you know, very much for the budget bill, had sent out a couple of emails saying so, even right before the protest, was like, okay, guys, make sure you all have a buddy, drink plenty of fluids, like, was, you know, understood that this was an important thing for us, that even if he didn't agree with it, he understood that it was an important thing for us as grad students and STAs. And so I feel like both Dave and I felt like we, most of the department was on our side, that we could have easily worked this out with our lecture, but sort of now all of a sudden we were sort of antagonizing people who would be our supporters. Mm-hmm. And so I totally understood what Dave was sort of concerned about. But it was just, like, that sort of became very clear throughout the protest, that it really only, like, could be like all of us have very good intentions about what should happen and trying to gain as many supporters as we can, trying to garner as much support as we can. And all it takes is a couple people that sort of, you know, take things a little bit too far, or just a couple of skaters who are not, you know, think it's fun or think it's great, or like, you know, yay, we get to camp out of the Capitol kind of thing, and then for it to just really be hard to manage. And the thing I really remember too about the protest was just, Capitol Police, I feel like people have a lot of criticism for them. The Capitol Police, the Madison Police Department, I feel like in general were very much on our side. They had jobs to do. They were still, you know, they still had jobs to do. But in general, things could have gone a lot worse. Like, many other sort of protests on that scale end up being, you know, just not nearly as peaceful as I think we had it. And I think that's really, to the credit of the protesters as well as to the Madison Police Department and the Capitol Police, I think they were very good about, because it's so quick for things, these things sort of escalate very quickly. I think they were very good instead about recognizing, you know, when things might start to slowly get out, like start to get out of hand, because a couple people that are just instigating, that they're much better about keeping it to just those people, like, and removing those people from it, instead of sort of viewing all of us, the entire group of protesters as antagonists.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think that it was the fact that we also, that we just in general, the protesters had a good relationship with the Madison Police Department and the Capitol Police that like, stayed as peaceful as it did.
Okay, so how about any you know, future plans? It sounded like you alluded to doing a little more of something in the math department, but are
mm-hmm.
yeah, what about that kind of stuff?
Yeah, probably just a couple things here and there. Maybe trying to organize a little bit more in the department. Just give up people sign up for our memberships, and. Probably, if I'm here in June, which I probably will be, going to phone bank, just calling people to get out the actual vote for the actual recall. Just hoping to come out and vote. This is for, I think, the AFT, I believe the AFT is doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Just volunteering with them. And yeah, that's about it. It's sort of what I plan. So sort of here and there, but not anything more extensive than that, I guess. Because I think, in general, I feel like what, I mean, research is such that, you know, focusing on the recall. And as a union, we're still operating, and we're operating fine. But, there isn't a whole lot we can do. Like, we can't actually bargain. We're not recertified. I mean, there's a lot of it that's just waiting to see what happens with Act 10. I mean, they had turned over... The judge had sort of... One of the judges, I forget his name, had turned over part of Act 10 so that... but we were still... Those... Because we didn't seek to certify, basically. And because we didn't seek to certify, we're still not a certified union. But I guess if we had been seeking to certify, we would be fine. We would actually... automatically be recertified. I'm not sure. It's not clear what his actual injunction is, but basically what he was blocking was the recertification process. And Regina told me a couple weeks ago that, actually this might have been back in March, that even the unions, particularly small unions, because the recertification process was that you had to have everybody, like 50% of your bargaining unit agree to be a part of this union or certified as a union,
right.
Which was ridiculous. Ridiculous things. But she was, and so TA decided not to recertify, not to bother trying. Also because TA has to do this by paper ballot because our constitution apparently never changed, or our bylaws or whatever. For a reason, everything can be a paper ballot. And so we chose not to recertify, but the review was saying how there were some other small unions that did choose to recertify and managed to get recertified. Like, they managed to get their bargaining, like, more than half of their bargaining units agreed to certify the union. And for them, that she's saying that, but even for them, they've been having trouble getting the government to actually bargain with them, to actually sit across the bargaining table with them. So that even though they've sort of gone through that process, even just bargaining about wages, even though they've gone through that sort of process and we had been, remember during the protests had been promised all along that, oh no, you can still bargain over wages, you can still do this. Like, here were these unions who had actually gone through the process, gone recertified, and can't get them to sit down with them. And so, she was saying that, yeah, it's a, you know, even with this Act 10, like, we don't, who knows what would actually happen. It's very clear that this administration is just not at all actually interested in us as unions. I think really just like us gone altogether. And so as much as during the protests, they said that, oh, this wasn't about union busting. Like, no, it really was, because even these unions who did everything that you asked for, you still were, they're still not sitting down with them and actually negotiating anything. And so it does feel, whatever happens actually with Act 10 in the courts and stuff feels a little bit moot, I think, because that we are sort of just waiting and seeing what happens with that, and then instead focusing more of our attention on the recall, because it's really about it now, a change in the administration. Yeah. She's doing a lot more with that. I think she's... Because AFT has actually endorsed Falk, and so she's been doing more with trying to promote Falk's sort of numbers, I guess, for voting. But so sort of when she asked me to volunteer, I think I make it clear to her, like, well, I don't know who I'm voting for, because I wouldn't feel comfortable calling people and asking them to vote for Falk, but if you want me to tell school to come out and vote, I can do that. Like, that's fine. And so, which is partly why I'm like, well, can we wait till after the primary, and then I will feel more comfortable with telling people to vote for, who, you know, suggesting who they should vote for, other than prior to the primary, when I don't even know yet.
Right. Okay, so is there, I guess before we wrap up, any other thoughts you want to add for today?
No, I don't think so. I think that pretty much covers it, yeah.